One of the priest professors that I studied with when I was at Bellarmine was a wonderful man who's since passed named Father Eugene Zoller. The name may sound familiar to some of you. He's a great man, a local, a Louisville native, wonderful teacher. Classes were pretty challenging. He had to really pay attention. He was also a bit eccentric, I think, in a healthy and good way. He came across in his teaching style a little bit. There's one habit that he had occasionally in class. It was something that I never saw any other teacher do anything quite the same way. But it had a way of really focusing your attention periodically, not every class, not every week even, but every couple weeks, he would say in the midst of a lecture, he would pause and he would say, "Now put down your pens, put down your pens." In those days, laptops and iPads hadn't really taken off, so you could say that and speak to everybody in the room. And you knew that what followed at that moment was going to be something particularly profound, very much at the heart of the subject matter, and more important than what might or might not appear on an exam. I thought of that line this week, reflecting on this gospel, "Put your pens down." This 12th chapter of the Gospel of St. Mark, in many ways, is a teaching chapter of the Gospels. Jesus has teachings about the resurrection, teaching about the greatest commandment, paying taxes to the emperor. But now he steps out of the teaching role. It's as if, in a way, he says to the disciples, "Put your pens down." And he cedes this teaching authority to the poor widow, who takes the featured place at the end of this 12th chapter. It's a beautiful little succinct image of the church, what the church means. One of the beauties of this poor widow is how completely unaware she is from what we know of the chapter, what's actually taking place. There's no indication that at any point she's aware that she has the Lord's complete attention, and even more, fascination draws the disciples in to witnessing her. And she leaves just as completely unaware as she came of what is actually taking place. It's not the only place in the Gospels in which someone is completely unaware of the Lord's observation. Another example is in John chapter 1. The Lord calls the first disciples. Among them, Philip goes to Nathanael, who has not been in that crowd, and says, "We have found the one of whom the prophet spoke of." He invites Nathanael to an encounter. So Nathanael has never met Jesus before. But when he comes into his presence, Jesus greets him as if he knows him. And Nathanael says the obvious question, "How do you know me?" And Jesus says to him, "Before Philip called you, I saw you under the fig tree. I recognized you. I knew you already." What do these stories say about God? I think part of the lesson is we never find God first. Any encounter, any discovery that we have in our lives carries with it a sensibility that God has already encountered us, already found us, already been seeking us out in our lives. Second insight that I think is worthwhile to reflect on is that the Lord describes her at the end of this gospel as contributing her whole livelihood in this very simple gesture of offering two coins. In English, we have the verb to put. She puts the coins into the treasury. But the Greek word is much stronger. It says she throws these two very small coins into the collection, the treasury. I think that stronger word is significant because it speaks to a type of abandonment, a type of utter dependence, a casting oneself upon God. Mother Teresa speaks of this beautifully in her memoirs, "Come Be My Light." She's got a fascinating little line where she says, "Conviction comes at the moment of abandonment." In reality, for most of us, we would like conviction to come first, to have complete and thorough proof, many examples, a fast rationalism that explains everything. But the reality is that they're happening almost simultaneously. It's when we leap in faith, abandon, depend on God as completely as we can, that the conviction comes home to us that it's the right thing to do. Another little fascinating piece of this that I wonder about, I don't know the answer, I don't know that there really is one, but But I wonder if when he thinks of her, when he looks at her, this poor widow, if he thinks that it's a foreshadowing of his own life. The Lord is days away in this gospel from being arrested, from his passion beginning. Does he look at her in tossing her coins, throwing them, and think, this represents what will happen with my life, a complete surrendering in my death, my passion, to the Father? Who knows the answer? But it's fascinating to think about it. Today happens to be the feast day of St. Martin of Tours. We don't celebrate it because it falls on a Sunday. But there's a neat little story about his life that intersects with this gospel that I'd like to share. It sheds a little bit of light, I think. Martin of Tours is a great saint in the 4th century. He's a young man. He had not yet been baptized. But he had a profound conversion experience that happened all at once in a single day. He was a soldier, and he was traveling through a city gate with a group of soldiers, and he saw as he was entering in the distance that there was this poor beggar who didn't have enough clothes. It was very cold outside, think of a day like today. And when Martin gets close to him, he tears his cloak in half, and he gives it to the beggar, and then he enters through the gates. And that night, he has a vision in which the beggar appears as Christ, with half of Martin's cape, his cloak. And that vision changes his life. He leaves behind his life as a soldier, he's baptized, becomes a priest, finally a great bishop, a great saint in the church. And that single encounter was revolutionary in his life. When he dies, a piece of his cape remains in a shrine that's dedicated to this gesture, this offering. And in a neat little historical twist, the diminutive for cape is capella in Latin. This is the word that gives us the English word chapel. The reason we use chapel is because of Martin's tiny little cloak that he gives. So what's the connection then with this poor widow? I think they are both revealing a great Christian paradox that lays before us all. What we keep, let me say it this way. We keep what we give to God and for God far more than we keep what we keep for ourselves. We keep what we give to God and for God far more than we keep what we keep for ourselves.